What is up, Martin?
It's good to be with you.
How's it going?
It's going well, man. I'm thankful for Bevins. I'm thankful for Steven and for his voice. I'm thankful for our listeners. You know, I love that we ended with a bunch of gratitude. This gives us a chance to do a little bit more of that. What are the things that we appreciated? What are the things that we, saw as beneficial from that interview? I myself found his ecumenical spirit. I love that. You know, I think I mentioned that in the interview as well, but I love the fact that he is someone who is constantly building bridges. You know, he's someone who is able to connect with a bunch of different people and, you know, and talk about missiology in broad terms, right? In terms that are very inclusive. So I don't know, what kind of things stood out to you as things that you appreciated, Greg?
I want to chime in on the ecumenical thing because I find Bevins so impressive as a theologian, and so much of what he says and argues, it resonates very, very deeply with me. He's been a significant influence on my own thinking. But one of the things that is so fascinating about him, you know, reading as a low church Protestant, I'm always just sort of surprised and charmed by how he effortlessly is engaging as very fully Catholic, very clearly Catholic, right? His writing is citing Vatican II, it's citing papal encyclicals, it's thinking in terms of his orders, commitments, and ways of doing things. And yet, as a reader, I never really sense like this kind of disconnect that you might get if someone were writing from a strong perspective that's not your own, right? Rather, he's engaging. He's quoting Luther. He did that in the interview, right? And I remember reading some of his work and thinking, you're always engaging Reformation thinkers, and you're engaged with guys like Charles Craft or engaged with Bosch, and he is just so impressively broad in his conversation, which I guess, if you're going to be one of the major proponents of something called prophetic dialogue,
you
ought to be pretty good at it. Yeah. Dialoguing across these kinds of boundaries for whatever they're worth. And boy, I'm kind of blown away by his capacity to have that conversation in the spirit, and really in the depth that he does.
I agree. Tell us, one of my questions has to do with ecclesiology, you know, and his contribution when it comes to missional ecclesiologies and missiological ecclesiologies, and in the way that he defines and conceives of church in the midst of mission. And I wonder if it's just, you know, a big thank you to his Catholic background. You know, that he's able to and consistently, you know, there's no marginalizing of the church here. And at the same time, his definition in his way of navigating church can be so inclusive, so broad. And again, another aspect of his whole career that I very much appreciate.
Yeah, I agree. And that ecclesiological thing is so interesting. In fact, I'm really glad. I wouldn't have just reflected in the moment on his works, at least the ones with which I'm familiar, and thought, you know, this is particularly ecclesiological. But when he described his forthcoming work as an ecclesiology, I was very excited. Because I think it's just going to be such a significant contribution for the reason that you described, right? That there is this richness coming from a Roman Catholic perspective, a richness to the commitment to the assumption of the church, the role that the church plays as such in participation in God's mission. That sometimes I think it's fair to say, would you agree, lacking in maybe more mainline Protestant, maybe more evangelical expressions of missiology, where for different reasons among those two camps, the church can become ancillary, secondary, or even a non-entity
Yeah, it's relegated to the sidelines of, you know, of God's mission. It's like, well, you know, we even use terms like Missio Dei because it allows us to not talk about it. It's broad enough so that we don't have to talk about the church, right? We can talk about God's missions in God's mission in the world in ways that are completely about God's, you know, divine initiative without reference to the church.
Right. Or in the evangelical expression, right? Even among those who would speak vociferously of church planting.
Yeah, so David Garrison.
It's not actually very ecclesiological. It's aimed at church. Yeah. We might say it's ecclesiocentric, but not, at least in my opinion, often healthy in an ecclesiological way.
Yeah, that's good.
And boy, that's a critique that deserves to be unpacked. I'm just going to throw it out there and see if it makes people mad.
I was just about to say, unpack that for us, Greg.
No. I'll say this. It's to turn the church into sort of a mere outcome of process, a result, rather than. You might say the essence, the logic, the sine qua non of a missional way of life.
Yes.
As disciples in community is the sense that I have often got from reading, we'll say some evangelical missiology.
Yeah. I mean, even when you think about the shifts that we've seen recently from, you know, conversations about CPMs, right? David Garrison and church planting movements, to a shift to conversations about disciple making movements, right? I mean, let's get rid of, can we stop talking about church? You know, let's talk about, and maybe this has to do with our emphasis in the West and maybe post-enlightenment emphasis on this maybe subjective dimension of salvation and maybe inflated view of the autonomous individual, whatever it happens to be, you know, but we're shifting right now. And you can see that and then you can kind of back up and see, okay, I can understand why you would want to shift away from maybe some of the more, I don't know, like instrumental, like reductionistic ecclesiologies among evangelicals, among Protestants. And I understand there's a desire to shift away from, you know, some of the less healthy aspects of, you know, church growth stuff as it continues to be influential today. And yet, you know, as we move into disciple-making movements and that those conversations among the evangelicals, including our own tradition, Greg, you kind of back up and you go, you know, we need more Bevins. We need some more, you know, Francis or Borgi. We need some guys that are in here that are like refuse to relegate the church to the sidelines and who, you know, the church continues to be, you know, for them. And again, this is Vatican II. Thank you, Vatican II. But the church is this visible agent of God's mission, right? The sacrament, the instrument for bringing about God's plan of salvation among all humanity. And that feels very maybe ecclesiocentric to some of us. And yet, man, we need guys who are talking about the church as missionary by its very nature and not, you know, that's not a sideline conversation. Like actually we're about making disciples and churches like, yeah, they kind of get shaped in the wake of these movements.
Well, and there's an interesting conversation. I'll be curious to see how or if Bevins addresses it in his new book. He's been strong on contextualization since the beginning of his career, right? Models of contextual theology and so on and so forth. But you know, part of the reason I think that ecclesiological commitment is difficult for those who are committed to rapid multiplication of disciples and that sort of thing, is because the church carries with it the tradition. Mm-hmm. And the tradition is the thing that, in a word, is so difficult to contextualize. And you go, well, what do we do with all of this stuff that seems to be unnecessary to these new Christians in this new location. They don't need to learn all that stuff. They don't need to be laden with all of that 2,000 years of developments and some of it.
And a lot of it's like so Western foreign. Exactly.
It's Western. It's capital W Western.
Right, right.
And so to say church and to say ecclesiological is in some way to import a great deal of baggage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll be curious to see how he addresses that. I think there are important ways in which we can do so without junking all of it, you know. But that to me is a major conversation point among those who would like to move more quickly on the ground and not be hassled so much by tradition.
Yeah, that's really exactly. And it's, you know, you've got these folks that are, I guess part of the question that comes up for me is this: how do you avoid that kind of sectarianism on one hand and that kind of postmodern relativism on the other hand, right? So you've got the sectarianism that's like, well, as soon as you introduce tradition, you're just dividing people now. Like you're introduce all of these things, and then all of a sudden you've got a bunch of different, you've got these clubs that start forming and excluding one another. So how do you navigate? So I bring this up to say, I think Bevins does a great job of this, right? He's able to navigate that balance between, I don't know, what you might call it, like purity and unity, right? Or on one hand, that's that he avoids that sectarianism, and he's at the same time avoiding that kind of, postmodern relativism that tends to be the thing that we fear the most among a lot of evangelicals, at least in my circles, right? That's one of the concerns is like, how do we, but not everything goes, and to introduce conversations on tradition feels like we're starting to say like, not everything goes. Right. And that's, I think that's, maybe that's also part of the resistance.
And just the sense that there's a necessary minimalism to frontier mission, right? Just a necessary minimalism. You want to keep things light and agile, and just the Bible, just the gospel, the simple gospel.
Reproducible.
The tradition is not reproducible.
Right. No, tradition is not. I mean, it involves slowing down and thinking and doing critical thinking and that kind of, and starting to locate yourself, situate yourself within broader conversations. And those, that does take time. And it also involves, stopping and kind of looking around, like, where am I? Like, how am I located within these broader movements called rationalism? How am I located within these broader movements, individualism, or I don't know what, these things that have been what we've inherited. Okay. So here's part of the struggle too, Greg, right? Is that we in the West, we're exporting a lot of our stuff, a lot of these ideas. You see these things catching on in other countries, and you've got, I remember being a missionary in China, and David Garrison, among a lot of the, David Garrison was known. It was a known name. They didn't know Bevins. They didn't know Bosch, but they did know Garrison and church planting movements. Yeah. And I'm talking about among house church networks in China. Now, so, my brother and I, as missionaries in China, we read CPM, right? We read stuff that was coming out of Global Frontier Missions, and it was helpful for us as we were kind of thinking about best practices and thinking through these things. Like, how do we, think about disciple making in a context that's very different than our own? I appreciate those things, but you've got a guy that steps in like Bevins into these broader conversations that we think of as missiology. Maybe here I'll shift a little bit of the conversation, but he says, I'm a part of these conversations, but I'm not a missiologist, right? I don't consider myself a missiologist. He'll say things like, which he's not the only one who said this,
Where have we heard this before?
I mean, Amos Young said this even when he was in charge of, you know, CMR, like the Center for Missiological Research. He's like the head of that, and he says that, and so did who else? I mean, Kraft.
We had multiple guests. Our anthropological guru, Lingenfelter.
Yes, also, I'm not a missiologist.
Not a missiologist.
Yeah.
And others, I can't remember. It just keeps echoing, right? So we're faced with, here at the Missiology Podcast, we're faced with guests who continue to deny that they're missiologists, who are clearly involved in missiology, in teaching it, in writing it.
Yeah, why are they doing that, Greg? Why do they keep saying that? I mean, I'll say I'm a missiologist. I love saying that I'm a missiologist, and it does carry negative connotations for me. I can say, I use that term, I enjoy it, but I sense from some of these folks, you know, that they're like, but not me. You know, like, yes, I'm writing things that missiologists are reading, but don't call me a missiologist. Like, why are they doing that,
Greg? Tell me. Part of it is the professionalism of the academy, where, for example, I have a degree in systematic theology. So I'm supposed to call myself a theologian. I am not qualified technically to call myself a missiologist. At this point in my life, I have just capitulated and called myself a missiologist anyway. I've studied it for long enough and participated in the practices and the discourse for long enough that I just go ahead and take the title, and if that offends people, I understand why. But
Bevins didn't. But Bevin has been a part of these conversations Bevins for a long time.
And so maybe he's respecting, you know, maybe he's respecting the disciplinary standards or something like that. Okay. But I actually think it's something else. I think there are a couple of other things. This is all my, you know, speculation.
I want to hear it, Greg. I want to hear it. What do you
One think? Is that, as the interview indicated, he was around when missiology as such was really consolidating. Now, there are precursors, things that we would read now, earlier things. Eugene Nida's work comes to mind. Early McGavern comes to mind. And some other theological works, including in the Catholic tradition, come to mind, right? Where we would read this now and call it missiology. At the time, that wasn't the terminology, and there weren't programs of missiology, and there wasn't a journal called missiology, and so on and so forth. Okay, so for someone like Bevins, and we've interviewed a number of people this season who are of a generation that preceded the field as such. So they were by default always already something else. They were anthropologists or theologians or practical ministry people, but they got pulled into and actually helped shape the discourse we now call missiology, the field of study, as we prefer to say here. And so it doesn't surprise me.
Or you hear me say conversation, partly because I keep calling it a conversation, because I'm like, I sense from folks that they're like, I don't want to be a part. I'm not a part of the field, but if you call it a conversation, then I'm okay. I'm cool with that. Yeah. Right.
So that pre-existing identity may be a part of it in some of these cases, but I actually think the more interesting reason and the thing that we have to keep wrestling with is that there is a perception of missiology sort of in the air, right? And it's a thing that many people who take their work seriously tend to feel, that's not what I do, right? I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to be careful about how I characterize the that there, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Just yeah, off yeah, your yeah, head. Yeah. But
characterize it in but, two sentences.
You know, there is an approach to, there is a zealous approach to missions in mm-hmm. among many Christians on planet Earth that has funded, literally and figuratively, a big part of the development of so-called missiology and what gets published as missiology and what programs and therefore courses get established as missiology. And a great deal of that is rooted in that kind of utilitarian, numbers-oriented, growth-oriented, in some ways theologically deficient.
Yeah, it's associated today with like the worst aspects in some ways of like the megachurch movement, right? So we're thinking about you're wanting to create lots of churches, really big ones, really fast, and it involves really good marketing, right? It involves thinking about people in terms of marketing, and there's this desire to maybe disassociate ourselves from that. Is that part of it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just it's an easy caveat to say, well, I'm not a missiologist. I'm a theologian who thinks about the foundations of mission, and I contribute to the conversation about mission, but I'm not a missiologist. It's an easy way of saying my primary area of interest is not, as he put it, how to plant churches, right? He referred to that and appreciatively, he referred to, learning about those processes or whatever. But there is, I think he represents that imagination that, well, missiology, if you're just going to fill in the blank, missiology is blank. It's something like the principles and practices of how to do church planting and church growth.
Yeah. And maybe nowadays it's the shift has been like, how to make disciples really fast, right? It's the science and study of how to evangelize people and get people to believe in Jesus and become loyal to Jesus.
Yeah. How to create conversions and churches. And I actually think that the irony here is that all of the people who tend to make the claim, I'm not a missiologist, are significant contributors to what missiology actually is. And there's little evidence that what missiology actually is could possibly be construed as that kind of utilitarian process oriented thing.
Yeah. An example of that would be this. In my degree in missiology at Fuller Seminary, we start with David Bosch, and our second book that we read was Constance in Context. We're reading Bevins right off the bat. We're reading guys like, Newbegin a little bit later on, but these are the guys that we're reading. This is when we talk about, and we're trained as missiologists, at least at Fuller Seminary, we're not reading, just to throw out names there, we're not reading folks like, and maybe we should be reading this because these are the folks that we should be like having conversations with, but we're not reading Watson. We're not reading Garrison. We're not reading Trousdale, right? I mean, like, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Jerry Trousdale, yeah.
Trousdale. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's again, important works, conversations that need to be had. Mm-hmm. But when I study missiology and when I think about the field of missiology, this quote conversation that is missiology, at least in my perspective and in my training, that, the focus has been on people like, Newbegin, Bosch and Bevins. As opposed to Garrison, Watson, and Trousdale, I think that you're right. I was just thinking more about the megachurch stuff and how much negative press that's getting nowadays.
It's interesting to point out when you say at least not at Fuller. It's interesting to point out that Fuller was the epicenter of church growth, right? Yeah. And when it was the School of World Mission, that's what it was all about. So it's actually not, at least not at Fuller, it's rather not even at Fuller. Not even at Fuller.
That's an important clarification. Right? That's
Is this the case? And of course, that tradition lives on in other schools now, and that's great. But there has been an evolution. But another dimension of that evolution is the anthropological side of things, right? Or as we might rather say, the ethnographic side of things. And so there is still this kind of practical aspect of missiology that's important to the curriculum at Fuller. But it's not, it's not techniques and methods for creating a hearing and communicating effectively. It's rather, how do you learn from people? How do you, right? How do you enter into a place as an outsider and rightly do what theologically we would consider incarnational living? And you may want to characterize ethnography in a better way than that, but
yeah. And then you could say theology is not ancillary to that, right? I mean, it is you could say more, but it is certainly a part, and it is definitely not ancillary to this thing, this conversation, this field referred to as missiology. And again, it Bevins and the way that Bevins fits in that is very interesting in my mind, you know, so he can talk about, actually, what is the term that he uses? He of himself, he says, I'm a theologian that is thinking missionally. Is that what he said? Or what was the term that he used? I'm blanking on it right now.
The thing that stuck out to me was that he works on the foundations of mission, but okay, that may not be what you're thinking of.
No, it's fine though. I'll think of it a little bit later. But so you're a theologian, Greg. You would have no problem saying I'm a missiologist as well. Or
I think I was a missiologist first. I was a missiologist who learned to be a theologian. An undergraduate degree does not make one an ologist of any kind, per se, but that was, you know, I did a missions degree and did mission work and started a missions journal and run a missions podcast and website. And I've just stayed as I've grown, you know, in the vocation of a theologian, I have been firmly rooted in the mission of God and felt like that was what all of it was about. You know, in a very similar way, as I said, Bevins resonates with me because he said his contribution, I think he said the mark that he made on systematic theology was to do theology as mission, right? Mm-hmm. As being about mission and bringing that. And that makes absolute sense to me. I find it difficult to think theologically apart from God's mission.
Yeah.
And
And thankfully that is more and more the case, I think, with, you know, with mainstream quote unquote theology. I think it's harder and harder for us to read without coming across, you know, Missio Dei thinking and God is in this business of loving the world.
Yeah.
Right? God is in this business of redeeming and reconciling the world to God's self. And yet, you know, you've got these scholars like yourself, like Bevins, that are living between the silos.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you guys. I think that as a person who was, as a scholar who was trained as a missiologist, mm-hmm. right from the beginning, we were told, you know, look, the world is moving, the academic world is moving towards interdisciplinary, and you guys, as missiologists, this is an interdisciplinary, like, discipline, if you want to call it a discipline, but this is inherently, by definition, missiology is interdisciplinary. So yeah, you're going to be living between silos and you're going to have to choose what those silos are going to be. Is it going to be anthropology and theology and systematic theology? Is it going to be, in my case, it's, you know, culture studies and leadership theory, right? And specifically like Latinx studies, leadership theory and ecclesiology, right? I mean, what's it going to be? Where are you going to live? Where's that convergence going to be for you and that you're going to be writing in? But, you know, in some ways, the missiology as it was defined for us was very much like, hey, here's this, you know, this messy thing. Choose your location in there. Mm-hmm. Choose where you're situated, what conversations you're going to be multiple that you're going to be a part of.
That's right. Interdisciplinarity for the win. That's what I think.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. One more thing on Bevins. I just want to register my excitement that he identified a key issue in the next 10 years as, quote, the idea of discipleship. And I just think that that's absolutely spot on. I think we are wanting for richer theologies, and I'm using the plural on purpose, theologies of discipleship. It's a topic of increasing interest and conversation, reflected even in what we've mentioned already, the disciple-making movements.
Right.
So I'm interested before I listen to the Bevins episode, and then I hear him say that, and I think, yes, that's, we have to flesh out, how does discipleship relate to mission? How does it relate to the church, right? What does it have to do with our theological grounding, our tradition? Mm-hmm. There's just a lot there that I hope he's right about. I hope that the idea of discipleship is a major part of the horizon.
And, you know, I think it's going to be his perspective on this as a Catholic theologian that's writing from a missiological perspective. I think one of the things that's going to be so important, again, his high ecclesiology, I don't know if he would refer to it as that, but like his, I think his endorsement of this high ecclesiology is, it's going to change the tone of his book. Right. This is not coming from an evangelical. This is coming from a Catholic theologian, you know, Catholic missiologist. I'm going to call him that, even if he doesn't call himself that. Because for me, it's a term of honor.
That's right.
You know, but he's writing about it, and he's writing, you know, that he's got his own folks in mind, right? His own folks for whom, you know, discipleship doesn't show up a bunch in Vatican II. He actually mentions that it was Pope Francis II, right? Wasn't it Pope Francis that he said, like, you know, for him, it is this community of disciples, right? We're talking about the church as a community of disciples on mission together as missionary disciples. But, it, you know, he's writing to his own folks and saying, oh yeah, and by the way, we all know this, but this needs to be stated more clearly, discipleship matters, right? As a part of this whole thing that we refer to as, you know, church and mission and our participation with what God is doing in the world, discipleship matters. So I think it's just going to be, it'll be an important voice. And I look forward to that podcast conversation with him as well.
Absolutely. Here's to more with Bevins.
Here's to more with Bevins.
It was awesome to catch up with you, Martin.
It was good chatting, Greg. And to all of our listeners, thank you. You know, continue to promote, continue to share this with others. We really appreciate those of you who take the time to listen and shoot us comments and questions. Really love those emails.
Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you on the next one.